Welcome to Season 3 of Love in Context. This season, we're exploring the life of Jesus, step by step, and uncovering what his story teaches us about loving God and others. Here on Love in Context, we're all about having real conversations about how to live out that love in practical, everyday ways, and understanding the Bible in its full context. We're so glad you're here. Let's dive into Season 3 of Love and Context. Welcome back to the Love and Context podcast.
Here we go.
It's a Love in Context podcast.
So this is trademark pending.
any similarity to a song?
You may not sing that or disseminate it in any shape, way, or form.
Any similarity to real songs, either in fiction or nonfiction, is purely circumstantial. It's not on purpose. I thought I was randomly selecting notes. It's always possible that I was not, though.
There's nothing original to a song music-wise nowadays.
No, actually, this is just dynamite intro for our listeners, by the way. Yeah. Welcome back to the Love and Context podcast. I'm Ben, that's Spencer, and we're going to talk about copyright law.
Yeah, 100%.
Ed Sheeran recently went in because he was getting sued over a chord progression.
Yeah.
And which is, by the way, just an absurd, if you're a musician at all, anybody listening who is a musician, that's an absurd lawsuit, because almost every song uses the same chord progression in different rhythms and different formats, sure, but it's the same chord progression. Mm-hmm. So one of his defense things, he went in for, I think it was like grand jury or wherever you meet with the judge beforehand to see if there's merit for the case.
Yeah.
And he took his guitar and he went for like 12 minutes straight and he played like 78 different classic rock songs using the same progression in a row right in front of him. And they threw out the case.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that's a pretty good way to make that.
Yeah.
And to his defense, like, he was like, if you enforce this thing, then I'm just going to stop making music because it's pointless. Right. So it is crazy the things that people sue over.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you'd think that they were, I don't know. I don't have any actually good follow up for that. So
no, I mean, the things people sue over is insane. And that could be a whole nother podcast episode. Random lawsuits. I don't think it would fit our bread and butter of what we're doing. But
so I want you to put a pin in the thought of lawsuits, because eventually we're going to be getting to the Sermon on the Mount. And in the middle, I think it's in the Sermon on the Mount where he's going to be talking about if somebody slaps you in the right cheek.
Yep.
And so we'll talk about it there. Because there is some good applications to lawsuits there.
Yeah.
So, but that's not where we are today. Today, we're actually going to be in Luke 4, predominantly. And this is taking place, so remember, we're harmonizing the Gospels for people. We're walking through the life of Jesus. Last week, we talked about the Samaritan woman at the well. And, well, technically, it was like 4 weeks ago. But
yeah.
It's also the summer, so if you are upset that we didn't release anything, I don't know what to tell you. We were enjoying the sun. Actually, if you can see Spencer's face on YouTube, it's a little redder than normal because he got some sun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I got a bunch of sun, and then I stayed inside for a couple of days, and I turned right back to super white.
Yeah, yeah. If you have ever lived a summer in Alaska, you will know exactly what we're talking about. Of how, like, the sun comes out and you get the long days and you're like, I have to make the most of it. And yeah, so that's all there is to it.
So with that being said, we're a little bit out of chronological order. There's some conversation about that and we don't care. So if it really bothers you, I'm sorry. Just listen to them in a different order. It'll solve itself. But this is going to take place right after Jesus in the wilderness with the devil in chapter 4 of Luke. I'm just going to read this story here and we're going to have a conversation about it. So Jesus returned to Galilee in the power of the Spirit. And news about him spread throughout the whole countryside. He was teaching in their synagogues, and everyone praised him. He went to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, and on the Sabbath day he went into the synagogue, as was his custom. He stood up to read, and the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was handed to him. Unrolling it, he found in the place where it is written, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." Then he rolled up the scroll, gave it back to the attendant, and sat down. The eyes of everyone in the synagogue were fastened on him. He began by saying to them, "Today this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing." All spoke well of him and were amazed at his gracious words that came from his lips. "Isn't this Joseph's son?" they asked. Jesus said to them, "Surely you will quote this proverb to me, 'Physician, heal thyself,' and you will tell me, 'Do here in your hometown what we have heard that you did in Capernaum.' Truly, I tell you, he continued, no prophet is accepted in their hometown. I assure you that there were many widows in Israel in Elijah's time, when the sky was shut for 3.5 years, and there was a severe famine throughout the land. Yet Elijah was not sent to any of them, but to a widow in Zarephath, in the region of Sidon. That's, by the way, I nailed that name.
So good.
I nailed it. And there were many in Israel with leprosy in the time of Elisha the prophet, but not one of them was cleansed, only Naaman the Syrian. All the people in the synagogue were furious when they heard this. They got up, drove him out of the town, and took him to the brow of the hill on which the town was built in order to throw him off the cliff. But he walked right through the crowd and went on his way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. A couple of contextual things. He's reading in the Sabbath. In synagogues during this time, they have what's called the Parashah reading, mm-hmm. right? So you would read in and the Haftarah reading. So the Parashah is in synagogue every week. You read a portion of Torah, and you take turns going through all the families of the community. And each week, they have each one of them is supposed to read, mm-hmm. right? So they split it up because reading the Bible is not a singular effort; it's a community effort, mm-hmm. right? Everybody gets a chance to read the words of God. Incidentally, this is a little piece that I found interesting in linguistics. When they go to actually read, a lot of people are illiterate.
Yeah.
So they can't actually read. They go up to the scroll, but they actually read what's memorized.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a scribe who will stand next to the person as they're reading. And if they read it incorrectly, they'll just correct them mm-hmm. as they're going. Because they're saying, well, it actually says this, right? You know what that person's called?
What?
The angel of the synagogue.
Hmm. All right.
Hmm. So I just think that's really interesting for those of you in Revelation who says, to the angel in the church of. Are they talking about a literal angel, or are they talking about the person responsible for making sure the word of God goes forward correctly?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe both.
Yeah.
Maybe both.
Maybe.
Anyways, little aside that does mm-hmm. nothing to do with what we're talking about today. So Jesus is in his hometown, and he's probably mm-hmm. it's likely he's coming there for the reading
mm-hmm.
because they have a schedule. They know when they're going to be reading. He reads from the scroll of Isaiah. They've all heard about him, and so they're like, okay, is he going to say anything? Because normally you just do the reading,
mm-hmm.
but then he actually starts to say, this is fulfilled in your presence today. Mm-hmm. And I do think it's interesting. He actually doesn't finish that quote from Isaiah.
Mm-hmm.
I need to find it really quick here.
Yeah.
So he actually doesn't finish the quote. Now, they would have been familiar with it, but the quote from Isaiah 61 is, the Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me, because the Lord has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. Yep, all nailed mm-hmm. it. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives, release the darkness for the prisoners, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. And this is the part where he leaves off. And the day of vengeance of our God.
Mm-hmm.
That's the part he leaves off.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important to note that even in this quoting context, because they, in their mind, we've talked about Israel, is expecting a Messiah that's going to rise up and defeat mm-hmm. Rome. Their mind is focused on vengeance.
Mm-hmm.
His mind is focused on deliverance.
Yes.
Those are very different things,
mm-hmm.
right? And at first, they love what he has to say.
Yep.
They're like, yeah, the brokenhearted are going to be, you know, healed. The blind are going to see. We love this. This is fantastic. And they're like, isn't this Joseph's son?
Mm-hmm.
Right. They're amazed. They love it. They hear everything about what he's doing. The Spirit of the Lord has been on him. He's been healing people all around. He comes back to his hometown. And they're like, let's see the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Why isn't he doing the stuff? Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, we can get caught in that very narrow mindset of like, this is how it should be. Right?
Yeah.
This is how this is exactly how it should be done.
Mm-hmm.
You talk to anybody in the way they do life, you will see that and how they go about life, right? You and I go about life a little bit differently,
mm-hmm.
right? But if you're the problem, it becomes a problem when you try to impose that mm-hmm. on other people. If I went into somebody else's life and was like, hey, you have to live exactly how Lindsay and I live.
Mm-hmm.
And then they actually saw how we live. There might be some people who are like, I don't know about that, right?
Yeah.
On
the flip side, you could be like, here are principles of how yeah. Lindsay and I live that might be helpful to mm-hmm. you.
Right.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You know, and like, In their mind, and they're having this conversation, mm-hmm. I think sometimes we love the message of, I've come to proclaim this, and I've come mm-hmm. to do this. But then they're like, but where's the stuff?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to see the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see Rome overthrown. I want to, you mm-hmm. know, like these different things. And so then he quotes from the proverb. He says, some of you will say to yourself, physician, heal thyself.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then he says something that really aggravates them. And he says, In the time of Elijah, when there was a drought, a lot of people went without food. But Elijah was sent to somebody who wasn't part of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And in Elisha's time, a lot of people had leprosy.
Mm-hmm.
But Naaman the foreigner is the one who actually received healing from Elisha.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, what do you mean it's about all nations? It's supposed to be about us, mm-hmm. right? What do you mean it's about like actually blessing the people around you? It's supposed to be about us, which, by the way, goes back to Torah, goes back to this whole idea of you are blessed to bless yeah. all people.
Mm-hmm.
And this in some places, like the narrative is getting lost. Like when we're talking about, yeah, proclaim the freedom, mm-hmm. overthrow the captors, heal the sick, love that. What do you mean, Gentiles?
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean, mm-hmm. What do you mean, the people that I don't like?
Mm-hmm. Well, we do that in church too, right?
Right.
Where we're like grace, mercy, redemption, forgiveness for all, and then a new person walks through the door, you know, a little raggedy mm-hmm. looking, and we're like, eh. And we're like, okay, now watch the offering bucket.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure he's not taking anything out of that because that's ours,
mm-hmm.
right? Versus sorry. Like.
It's like, okay.
But you see what I'm saying.
Yeah, right? No, I actually am 100% with you.
Yeah.
Because, okay, so I do, like, I want to caveat this, too, that I do think the stewardship of your money is really good, mm-hmm. having security, all those type of things. Also, it's not actually our money. It's God's money mm-hmm. to do with, like, to do ministry.
Yep, exactly. But we do this in church where we're like, this is a great message. And then someone comes in who really needs to hear that message, an outsider. And we're mm-hmm. like, I don't know if I feel comfortable with them being in the building. And then at that point, it's like, okay, well, let's go back to what this is really about.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we've talked about it in the past, but are you creating safe or transformative places?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Because transformative places are not typically safe. So we've referenced it a couple of times on the podcast, but in one of the chapters of just talking about what we're talking about, one of the chapters of my book that I released,
mm-hmm.
It's called Getting Out of Diapers.
Mm-hmm.
I talk about when people come into your family, like babies poop a lot.
Really?
Yeah, I know. This is shocking to you.
I know.
Everybody listening is like, what do you mean babies poop?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, babies poop a lot. And mm-hmm. I don't know if you know this, but they also do it in their pants a mm-hmm. lot. The expectation of a baby is not that it's not going to poop its pants. In fact, the expectation is that it is going to poop its pants mm-hmm. for a long time.
Yes.
And it's going to take years before mm-hmm. they grow to the point where they're going to be able to take care of that situation themselves.
Yeah.
And when you're transitioning from diapers to non-diapers,
mm-hmm.
it is a hectic time, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, especially in the case of my son, mm-hmm. it was a very hectic time
mm-hmm.
That he was... let's just say less enthused of using a toilet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why do I say that? Because we have people who come and they come to hear God's word for the first time. They respond in faith. They come to understand who Jesus is. They accept him into their life. They step into our church. The expectation is they're going to mess up.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be messy.
Yeah.
That's the expectation. And that should be the expectation of the church.
Mm-hmm.
People are going to mess up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's our job to, as family, community, be around them and help them clean up.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a process. It's not a place for shame. It's a process of growing up.
Yeah. And I mean, and when you potty training a kid, like every kid learns different,
mm-hmm.
right? So for example, with our daughter,
mm-hmm.
We just did the cold turkey method when she mm-hmm. was about 2 years old. We just
Is that if she doesn't go, you throw cold turkey at her?
Exactly.
Yeah, perfect.
No, we actually were like, hey, we're just going to have a few months where she's going to run around with no diapers on and she's going to potentially and we did no pants too, like mm-hmm. when we're in the house and she's going to pee. And when we see her peeing, we're just going to move her to the toilet real quick. Mm-hmm. And she caught on really quick, like, oh, this is what I got to do. Mm-hmm. Right. And we had to clean up some messes. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so like that is like, but there's other families who do it differently. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it comes to helping people follow Jesus, like you also have to take them where they're at.
Yeah. And I mean, like you wouldn't expect a baby to use a toilet.
No.
Right?
Yeah. And you have to, I mean, but along with that, you also have to take them where they're at and you know, what some people can ease into it a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And there's other people where they're like, nope, I'm following Jesus. I have to rip this huge thing out of my life right away.
Yeah.
Right? And so you have to walk with people where they're at.
Correct.
And encourage them in the right direction.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just to be clear, a toilet and Jesus are two different things.
Yes. This is what we call an analogy.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. This is not theology.
I think with what has been problematic in community is mm-hmm. when somebody comes to Jesus, they expect things to instantly change. And that's just mm-hmm. not like you were in the process of merging your life with Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like the problem is that some things do change dramatically, like maybe your attitude, your perspective, like all these different things change dramatically, like because you've gone from zero to 100 with Jesus, but not everything in your life changes. Like he starts to reveal things, he starts to move through your life, and you're like, oh, and like I'm here 28 years into my faith. God's still like, hey, you know this thing? Why don't we tweak that a little bit, you know?
Right?
Yeah, and especially when he moves me into like new avenues, new situations that I haven't been in before. It's a lot of like God is like, hey, I'm gonna work you through this, and when I step into things I've never done before, it's messy again, and I have to learn again. I was watching my son play soccer this last weekend, and I remember the first year when he played soccer, and let's just say following the ball is not his favorite thing. Laying on the ground or doing windmills was more his favorite thing. And but this year, we had the conversation. I told him, hey, if you get a goal, you get ice cream. Or if you kick the ball at least 10 times, you get ice cream. And that kid was motivated. Let me tell you, I have a video where he was like, he's like chasing that ball down and getting his foot in there however he can, because that kid wants some ice cream. But even the difference between a year, like growing up between a year, it makes a big difference in how he's able to handle it. And there's just no replacement to spending time living into something. Right. I think what's frustrating in this story with Jesus is they grew up with Jesus. They're familiar with where he comes from, and they have expectations on who he's going to be. I mean, you gotta imagine if you saw Jesus as a teenager, we have no idea what he was like. But you know, we don't know what he's like as a teenager. We don't know if he was a really good tecton crafter. I mean, I assume that he was good at woodworking. But you know, like these are the people watch him grow up, and it's so much different than like in a town we would grow up in today. The most probably closely modeled would be those really really small rural towns, right, where they have like 50 people.
Yeah.
And everybody's property is connected, and they know everybody. I had a friend who lived up in Healy, Alaska. Do you know from that area? I think there's like 400 people there, maybe. It's like 400 people. So you literally know everybody. And it's really hard to get away with anything in a community like that where everybody knows anybody.
Yeah.
Right? And so, and you also have like, when you have a town like that, it's really good, but you also have this thing of like, everybody knows you. And when people form ideas about you, sometimes it's hard to step out of what they have in their head about you.
Yeah. Yeah. I have friends up in Galena, Alaska, which is, I mean, it's like east of Fairbanks, about an hour flight or so. Middle of nowhere, again, like maybe 200 people, right?
Yeah.
And again, everybody who knows everybody.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And so like, Jesus comes back to his hometown, and they love the message. But they're like, okay, but we've been hearing all this stuff you're doing. Why aren't you doing it anywhere else? Give us the stuff. Give us the, you know, do the stuff. And he's like, you don't really understand why I'm here. Like, it's not about the stuff. It's about actually getting your life in line with God. It's about deliverance from something that you don't even realize is killing you. Right? And they get so frustrated with him that they're like, hey, you know what? I think we're just going to take you to the edge of town and chuck you off the chuck you off the cliff. Which, by the way, I was actually looking at Nazareth, and there is totally like this like cliff area. So it totally tracks. So this is a place they would have gone.
Yeah.
I wonder how often God is talking to us, and because of our preconceived notions on who we think he is, because of either like the tradition we grew up in or something we've just got held on to, we've never actually stopped long enough to see that maybe he's doing something broader than what we think.
Yeah.
Right? That he's loving just a little bit wider than we think. That he's just, you know, just all those different things that kind of go with that. So Jesus has this confrontation, and then one of the things he immediately does is he goes and calls a bunch of people with very different perspectives. We're going to hear about a few of them, so just calling some of the first disciples. Starting in chapter 5, it says, one day as Jesus was standing by the lake of Gennesaret, nailed it, the people were crowding around him and listening to the word of God, and he saw on the water's edge two boats left there by the fishermen who were washing their nets. He got into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon, and asked to be put out a little from shore. Then he sat down and taught the people from the boat. By the way, I should note something that came up in the last passage and is here. When Jesus read, he stood, because you always stand when you're reading from the Word of God, but when you actually teach, you sit down in Jewish custom. So that's one of the reasons they keep saying that he sits down before he starts teaching is because that's a Jewish custom. When he finished speaking, he said to Simon, "Put it out into deep water and let down the nets for a catch." Simon answered, "Master, we've worked hard all night and haven't caught anything, but because you say so, I will put down the nets." When they had done so, they caught such a large number of fish that their nets began to break. So they signaled their partners in the other boat to come and help them. And they came and filled both boats so full that they began to sink. When Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, "Go away from me, Lord, I am a sinful man." For he and all his companions were astonished at the catch of fish they had taken. And so were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, Simon's partners. Then Jesus said to Simon, "Don't be afraid. From now on, you will fish for people." So they pulled their boats up on shore, left everything, and followed him. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, there is a different account of how that story is told in different places. a couple of things we want to note there is that Jeremiah 16:16 actually references God sending fishers to gather his people. Mm-hmm. This whole idea of fishing for people is not a new concept. Mm-hmm. It is actually an Old Testament concept that God is just, or Jesus is breathing new life into. Mm-hmm. I think that it's important to note that we have these people who are being amazed, or they want the stuff. They are so focused on the mission, on what they want, that when Jesus starts talking about actually wanting to go and it be about all nations, they get frustrated and want to throw him off a cliff. Mm-hmm. In this story, Jesus is preaching to people. He uses their boat, sits down, preaches to them, gets a miraculous catch of fish, but their first reaction isn't, "Sweet, lots of fish." Mm-hmm. Said, "You shouldn't be here because I don't deserve your grace." Mm-hmm. "I don't deserve to have you around here." He says, "That's okay. Of course you don't. Most people don't."
Yeah.
It's Ben's Living Translation, the BLT. "But what I'm going to do is I'm going to have to actually have you go and fish all nations."
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
It's actual like recognition of like, I don't have it together. And God says, "I know, but I'm going to send you out and you're going to go." And they gladly follow.
Yeah, the other thing that Jesus foreshadows here is that when you follow him, things probably aren't going to go exactly in the order you think they're going to go. So these were professional fishermen. They knew how to do it. They knew when to go out, all this stuff. It was not custom to actually go fish middle of the day in this culture. You went out at night, early in the morning, late in the evening. All right, so you get done with this teaching. Most scholars argue this was close to middle of the day. It doesn't actually say.
I mean, we're going to go, let's say somewhere between 9 and 2.
Yeah. And so Jesus, you know, is acting like a rabbi who knows nothing about fishing at this point. And he's like, "All right, it's 10 a.m. Let's go fishing." And they're like, "We were out all night. Nothing happens." And Jesus is like, "Let's give it a try anyways." They're like, okay. So they go out and they're successful, right? And the reality is when we follow Jesus, there's going to be times where Jesus is like, "Hey, how about this?" And we're like, "Excuse me?"
Mm-hmm.
And we tend to double check that, right? Because it doesn't fit our narrative or what we know. But that's the reality of following Jesus.
God in general has weird battle plans.
Mm-hmm.
Jericho, I want you to walk around the city.
It was a horrible battle plan.
Last time, I want you to walk around seven
times,
blowing
the trumpets.
From an
earthly perspective, horrible battle plan.
And then go scream at the wall, right?
Yeah.
What's Gideon is like, "Hey, I want you to get rid of most of your people and then get a trumpet and a clay pot and then surround them. So blow the trumpet, break the pot, and scream."
So on that one, I preached on that one time, and because on Gideon, they surrounded them, right? And someone was like, "Well, they were on these hills, and when they yelled and made noise, that's probably what threw," and they saw, they're like, "One torch could have represented like 30,000 people." And I was like, "Except for, there's no way 300... is going to sound like 300,000 or 900,000 or whatever, whatever it is." And they're like, "Well, unless God intervened." And I was like, "Now you're getting
now
the point
you're
of the story."
The story. The point of the story isn't to follow God's plan.
Uh-huh.
Jesus's plan for fishing. Mm-hmm. Don't fish at night when is the right time, or early in the morning, which is the right time. Go cast your net after you cleaned it, which because it says they're cleaning their nets.
Mm-hmm.
After you clean your net, go chuck it out in the water, and it's going to be so much that you're literally going to have to get your buddies over here to help you drag it in.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Later, he's going to have this conversation, which I think is a worthwhile conversation for us. because Jesus calls Peter to be a fisher of men, and yep. there is some implication that we're called to be fishers of men too, in the same vein as what Peter and the apostles are called to be called, mm-hmm. right? To go and fish for people,
yeah.
right? He's going to tell a parable later in the Gospels, which is that you go and catch the fish,
mm-hmm.
every kind.
Mm-hmm.
The angels will sort them out.
Yeah.
They'll separate the good and the bad ones.
Mm-hmm.
And Christian, I just got to tell you, Christian, being me, being you, I see a lot of social media of us trying to figure out which fish are fish.
Mm-hmm.
Stop. Mm-hmm. Just go catch fish.
Mm-hmm.
Let the angels sort it out.
Yeah. Go share the gospel.
Go be the light into mm-hmm. a dark world.
Yeah.
Be salt.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Similar story, it's going to be right there with the wheat and the tares, is that there's wheat and then there's tares sowed among them, and they say, well, do you want us to go rip up the tares? He's like, no, because you might take some of the wheat with it.
Mm-hmm.
Let it grow, and at the end, we'll harvest,
mm-hmm.
and the angels will take out the tares.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Nowhere in there was that our job.
Mm-hmm.
Our job was to grow,
mm-hmm.
to be part, to receive, to grow, be fruitful, all those different things that are in there.
Yep.
Go fish. Generally speaking, leave judgment to God.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's a little aside, but that is a huge thing that is happening.
Well, and how freeing is that?
Mm-hmm.
To be like, okay, it's not my job to, it's my job to be the light, to disciple, to share the good news, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if people give me the authority to speak into their lives and to be, you know, to provide correction, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the Lord's job to determine what is good, like the good, the bad, right?
And the ugly.
And the ugly.
I just couldn't resist.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Ah! So, right. Yeah, no, it is, mm-hmm. it is, it, but it's a reoccurring thing. And so I just find there's just this parallel of like this attitude is like, what's in it for me?
Mm-hmm.
I actually... Peter's quote reminds me of Isaiah 6,
mm-hmm.
when Isaiah is caught up into the throne of God. He sees the presence of God. He sees the magnificence of God.
Yeah.
And he goes, I shouldn't be here.
Mm-hmm.
I am an unclean man, and I live among a people of unclean people.
Mm-hmm.
And then God sends the person with the coal to go and touch his tongue. And then he says, I got to send some people out. Who's going to go? Isaiah replies, here I am. Send me.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar. Peter's going to say, I am a sinful man. You shouldn't be here. He's like, yeah, but I'm calling you.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to go.
Yeah.
Right? And it's important to note that Peter's probably the oldest of them, but we're probably talking in his 20s, early 20s.
Yeah.
He's married because we know he has a mother-in-law was married.
And we know he's old enough to pay the temple tax.
Yeah. So that's why a lot of people say 21.
Mm-hmm.
But James and John, nope. Mm-mm. They're probably 12, 13, or right on that cusp because they're still working with their dad.
Mm-hmm.
So they haven't bar mitzvahed, so they're not separate from mm-hmm. the household. And then you have Andrew, who's going to be younger, but he's probably not that much younger than Peter,
mm-hmm.
Simon in this story.
Yeah.
And so these young guys are being called to pursue and follow after Jesus. And, they leave everything.
Mm-hmm.
They leave everything. You have this Nazareth town, which, you know, people are going to say, what good comes out of Nazareth? And, now you have these little teenage boys and, you know, a guy yeah. who's self-proclaimed is, a sinful man. That are now disciples.
Mm-hmm.
The problem isn't where you come from. It's how do you respond to the call?
Yeah.
Actually, I saw this, and I just, man, I love this analogy that a pastor, he went to a conference, and he was signed up to be a teacher there. And he said, hey, can I get the like names of people who signed up to come to this conference?
Mm-hmm.
And like the names and addresses, they're like, yeah, sure. You know, that's weird, but okay, whatever. So he picked like 7 or 8 people out of the conference, and he wrote them a check for $10,
mm-hmm.
and he sent it to them. And all of them received the check, but like nobody's cashing. He keeps checking his account. Nobody cashes it. Nobody cashes it. Nobody cashes it. Finally, somebody cashes one. So he sends them another check,
mm-hmm.
and they cash that one. So he sent them another check, right? Leading up to this conference. And he said 2 out of like 8.
Mm-hmm.
Cash the check. And he gets there and he says, and I'm going to make up the name, but Tom Bombadil, obviously I'm quoting from Lord of the Rings. He's like, where are you? And he's like, oh, I'm over here. He's like, I wrote you a check. Why didn't you cash it? He says, well, I didn't know if it was for me. it had your name on it. It was from me, you know? And he's like, how many times are we given a check? We're given a solution to a problem. We're given something specifically. And we're like, well, I just don't know if it's for me.
Yeah.
Whereas the other person, he says, her name was Barbara. And she's like, Barbara, blah, blah, blah. Where are you? And she's like, I'm here. He's like, you cashed my check? She's like, I cashed all of them. Right. And he's like, everybody had the same opportunity. Mm-hmm. I sent everybody the same check, but some people cashed them. Some people didn't. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if there's not something that we can glean here from this call of God is that he's ready for all of us to get involved.
Right.
Now, some of us later, there's going to be a story about 5 talents, 2 talents, 1 talent. Either way, he wants to give you a talent. He wants to give you a deposit. He wants to give you something to go put active. He's giving you a check. It's not your authority. It's not your power. It's not anything that you've done that influences this. Yeah. But you now have this resource to go and be fishers of people, to change the world, to make it look like the place that you come from, which is heaven.
Yeah.
The real question is, are you going to cash that check? Or are you going to try to chuck the Son of God off the side of a cliff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard. Because I think that if we're really intellectually honest, we struggle more with the side of that we'd rather chuck Jesus off a cliff than deal with cashing a check.
Well, yes. You also got to caveat this with, are we aware that we're choosing the throwing Jesus off a cliff?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think we're unintentionally doing it. But if we're if we look at what we actually do with what God gives us, it's what we often do.
And we have to be intentional and look at that.
Yeah.
Right? Being like, what has God given me, and am I using this for his glory?
Yeah.
Right? Because reality is it's not ours anyways, right? Mm-hmm. Right? Like, we both have houses in our names, right?
Yeah.
They're really not our houses.
Yeah.
Right? They're not. They're the Lord's.
Well, first they belong to our wives, and then to... but they had to surrender them to God.
Us thinking we have a say of what the house looks like on the inside is
I would like this. Well, that's great, honey. Yeah. You get zero opinion. No, I'm just kidding. My wife actually asks my opinion all the time, and my opinion is I want somewhere comfy to sit.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it all belongs to God, right? And but we don't often... Or I say we struggle with keeping that mentality in all things,
right?
And I just if there's one thing that we take away from this as I would say is that God is coming for all people. He's calling us to all people. He's given us resources to go and fish.
Yeah,
we need to go fish and spend less time judging the fishes that we're catching.
Mm-hmm.
Just catch them.
Mm-hmm.
Go after them. Go after those, you know, those fish that you think are undesirable.
Well, and the reality is when you go fishing, there's times where you catch amazing fish.
Mm-hmm.
And there's times where you don't catch anything at all. And there's times where you catch fish that you're like, eh, right?
You know when you definitely don't catch fish?
When you don't go fishing.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, is if you don't go, you're never going to catch anything.
Yeah.
Nothing's ever going to be caught.
Yeah. I was watching a instructional video from a physical therapist, and they were talking about people are like, oh, I can't lose weight because I don't have half hour to go to the gym in a day and all these different things. And they said, did you know that if you actually just find 2 minute intervals to do high energy activity, there's like a 45% reduction in like heart disease and cancer and like a bunch of other things. You can do that twice a day. We're literally talking like 5 minutes a day and the health benefits. So like, are there more for spending an hour in the gym? Yeah. But you know, when you don't get any benefit is when you don't go at all.
I have a good friend. He very, 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 very busy guy. And so he just has...
He's talking about me.
Yeah, yeah. He has an alarm that goes off on his phone every 2 hours. And he's like, yep. And it's 20 push-ups and 10 squats just every 2 hours. Just so I'm like, I did something.
Yeah.
And like, and so, you know, and he's like, yeah. So he's like, throughout the day, he's like, I do about 160 push-ups and about 80 squats. And I'm like... I was like, well, do you realize that's more than most?
Yeah. Yeah. Imagine, like, I was having this conversation about when we're talking about discipleship and church growth and evangelism and reaching people for Jesus. Sometimes it can be daunting because you look out into the world, or you look out into your group of friends, and you're like, man, there's so many people that don't know Jesus. What if you just focused on one? Like, you spent time building a relationship with one person so you can talk about Jesus, so you can just share your life, your story, and honestly just share a story with them.
Yeah.
Like, we, like, just building relationships with one person, I think you'd be surprised as you look back over the years how many people you start impacting.
Mm-hmm.
One person that you intentionally, getting back mm-hmm. to that word, intentionally invest in and live into and reach out to.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that, you know, there might be more than one, sure, mm-hmm. but at least one. One person that you're being intentional with mm-hmm. on purpose,
mm-hmm.
right?
Well, and also being intentional in that moment, right? Like, it's not, just to give you a baseball analogy on this, right? If you're...
Incidentally, he is a huge Mariners fan. So if you are not, feel free to send message or trash talk to loveandcontext@gmail.com.
Please do. I've been disappointed by them a number of times. So, but if you are at bat and you are trying to focus on the pitch that is coming 10 pitches from now, mm-hmm. chances are you're going to have a crappy at bat,
mm-hmm.
right? You really just have to take it one pitch at a time, mm-hmm. right? And when we are... And when we are sharing the gospel with people, we really just have to, who's in front of us? Who are we building a relationship with right now?
Mm-hmm.
And how are we building them up, right?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't need to be these big steps. It doesn't need to be these, it doesn't need to be this big grandiose plan. It's just like, who's there right now who needs to hear about Jesus that's in my sphere, and how can I talk to them?
Yeah.
Start there.
Yeah.
Don't overcomplicate it.
Hmm. So, man. All right. Well, that's Life of Jesus and yeah. Rejection. By the way, this is something that I personally understand, is that if you sometimes go back to people now being in a hometown that I grew up in,
mm-hmm.
right? Originally, I went back to the church that I originally came from, and it was definitely a struggle because people remember me as a kid and they didn't recognize mm-hmm. me as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, in their brain, they always kind of put me back in, like, where mm-hmm. I was 20 years older now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's difficult with this idea of a prophet's not welcome in their hometown.
Yeah.
It's not that they're not welcome. It's just sometimes they can't see where you've gone.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that they're bad people, but maybe send a different prophet their way or mm-hmm. a different person their way. Mm-hmm. And you go to people that will be able to see your growth.
Yeah.
To value where you've come and what God has done in your life too. Mm-hmm. That's where I am now, and it's been incredibly valuable with the family that we're mm-hmm. in.
Yep.
You know, that's pretty much it. I don't have a whole lot else to go on here except to sing you a goodbye song. Goodbye from Love and Context. Goodbye.
Pretty sure you just copywrote some.
And that's a wrap for today's episode of Love and Context. We hope this conversation encouraged you and gave you fresh insights into how we can better love God and others through the powerful truths of the Bible. We'd love to hear from you. Send your questions, thoughts, or suggestions to loveandcontext@gmail.com. Your feedback means the world to us and helps shape future episodes. Stay connected with us on social media for updates, behind-the-scenes content, and additional resources. You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and Facebook at Love and Context. Be sure to hit that follow button and join our growing community. Thanks for being part of the Love and Context family. Remember, love is at the heart of it all. Until next time, keep seeking wisdom, embracing love, and living out your faith in today's world.
Copywrote some random. Na 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 na
na na na na na na na na na na na. I'm gonna include this, by the way, in the podcast. There's gonna be like 3 minutes of people singing, hearing me sing random tunes.